Hey, friends. Welcome back to the More Jodi podcast. I'm Jodi, the girl who says what everyone is thinking, unapologetically myself, as often as possible. I used to see this as a problem, but now I see it as a gift. Vulnerability, connection, and embracing challenges are just a few of my very favorite things. And I'm here to help you push a little more, dig a little deeper, and see more possibility in your one beautiful life. Andy Rooney once said, "Everyone wants to live on top of the mountain, but all the happiness and growth occurs while you're climbing it." That is precisely what this podcast is about. Thanks for tuning in. Why the darkest day brings so much light. Happy Good Friday to all of my friends listening today. You guys, Good Friday is probably the most meaningful day of our calendar year for me. And I just got thinking about this recently that I was like, I want to break this down a little on my podcast. It's an honor to have a platform where people show up and, you know, take part in these conversations or these, you know, deep thoughts that I have. And I don't take that lightly. And I thought, if I wanted to tell the world one thing this week, what would I tell them? And it just made me think you needed a story about hope. You needed to hear about hope this week. We have seen so much trauma in our world in these last few years alone. You know, prior to the pandemic, we would reference 9/11 or different bombings or shootings or things that have happened or the tsunami in Phuket. Like, it's endless. But in the last few years, it seems like it's just piling on. The trauma is so much closer together and it's heartbreaking. And the world is heavy. The world is confused. The world is broken. The snare entangles us. The lies pull us deeper into our own grave. We are divided. We don't even know what to stand for anymore because the world is constantly lying to us. The world says you're enough and that you're self-sufficient and that you can do this on your own. And then when you can't handle the weight of it, you feel like a failure. But what if you had a God to carry the weight of your burden? The world says that truth is subjective and you create your own identity. But I ask you, are you good at playing God? I'm not. The world says, heal yourself. I don't even know where to start with this one, to be honest. But what I can tell you is that loving God has changed every single corner of my life. There is no stone unturned. And when I pray and ask God to change my situation, God changes my perspective. He loves me as I am, but he doesn't leave me as I am. One of the coolest parts of my faith is how God has expanded my capacity to love other people in ways I cannot explain. We all know who we have in our life who is hard to love or doesn't give back what we would hope for in that relationship or confuses us or drives us crazy. Or we all have people, we all have situations like this that feel a lot of times hopeless. And I'm sitting on the fence right now in many of the arguments happening in my world, mostly just looking around with a confused look on my face, feeling like I should be passionate for one side or the other. And then God tells me just to love him and let him sort out the rest. Pray about everything and worry about nothing. Judgment was never my job. I wasn't created to carry the weight of the world or even the weight of my own burdens. I needed a savior. And when the sustaining love and strength from God is the reason that you keep loving and showing up in your marriage, in your family, in your parenting, I feel like you should tell people. And we don't. And when you start the day spending time with God, praying about your hopes, joys, concerns, fears, frustrations, and then afterwards, everything seems less heavy. I feel like you should share this gift, but I don't. I just carry on, sort of with the sense that it looks like I'm doing it on my own. And we know I'm all about personal development, but I have to say, and I don't know if this is like blasphemous to say, but my relationship with God is my finest tool of refinement in my life. It makes me think of a carver who likely starts with an axe and a saw and, you know, makes the wood smaller. And then the tools get more and more intricate and specific the more advanced the changes are. or the more intricate the changes are, maybe, into all the little nooks and crannies, carving a beautiful masterpiece. And a friend recently told me that I'm the only Christian that she knows. And I was like, what? How is that possible? I live in a godless city, I will say that though. But her grandpa had believed in God, and that was it. She didn't know anything about it. She didn't know any of the stories. She'd never been to church, never been to Sunday school, vacation Bible school, nothing. And it made me think, I want her to know. I want her to know even just the basis of what Christianity is and what it brings and how it changes your whole life in the most beautiful and safe, and I don't even have words for it, honestly. But sharing your faith is real and vulnerable. And I'm like the queen of vulnerability. I love it. But I get scared too. But when it's the one thing that is getting you through this life, it's definitely worth sharing. And when you fall in love with the love of God or God himself, you don't want to hide it. And this 2023 world tells me that I should keep it to myself. But if I've learned anything about what the world tells me, it's that I need to press into any narrative that is opposite, that is opposing the lies of this world. The truth is, I believe everyone needs Jesus to forgive their sins, change their heart, and blow their mind, in all honesty, to blow their mind. The Ragman, an Easter story. This story is adapted from the poem by Walter Wangerin Jr. by Scott Ragan. I saw a sight so strange and experienced something so amazing that it's hard for me to explain it to you. If you can just give me a few minutes, I'll do my best to describe it to you. Before dawn, one Friday morning, I noticed a young man, handsome and strong, walking through the back alleys of the city. He was pulling an old cart filled with clothes, both bright and new. As he pulled the cart, he was calling out in a clear, powerful voice, "Rags, rags, new rags for old, I take your tired rags." The air was foul in these dark side streets, tainted by the filth and trash that living unleashes on the world. And yet, as the man called out, the air became tinged with the faint scent of cleanliness, as though the breeze that carried the sweet music of his voice also carried with it the hope and promise of a cleansing rain and a purifying wind. "Rags, rags, new rags for old, I take your tired rags, rags." The man continued to move through the dimly lit of early morning, his strong voice echoing from building to building and street to street. Now, this is a curious thing, I thought to myself, for the man stood 6'4" and his arms were like tree limbs, hard and muscular. His eyes flashed with intelligence. What was he doing here in a city that had no need for such a useless profession? Who recycled rags anymore? Couldn't he find no better job than this to be a rag man in the heart of a city? Driven by my curiosity, I followed him, and I wasn't disappointed. Soon the rag man saw a woman sitting on the porch of a small house. She was crying into a handkerchief, racked with sobs as she shed 1,000 tears. Her body language said it all as she seemed folded in on herself, shoulders down, back slumped, knees and elbows making a sad X. She had no hope. Her heart was breaking. Her body may have been alive, but her soul wanted to die. The ragman stopped his cart. Quietly, he walked over to the woman, stepping around beer cans, old newspapers, dead toys, and broken furniture. "Give me your rag," he said, gently as he knelt beside her. "And I'll give you another." The woman looked up into his powerful, compassionate eyes and saw something there that paused her tears. The ragman slipped the handkerchief from her hand and used it one last time to dry away the flow of tears from her face. Never taking his eyes off hers, he laid across her palm a linen cloth so clean and new that it shined. She looked down at the new cloth and then back at the eyes of the man who had given it to her. The ragman slowly leaned forward and kissed the woman's forehead and then turned away and walked back to his cart. As he began to pull his cart again, the ragman did a strange thing. He put her old, used, stained handkerchief to his own face, and then he began to weep. He sobbed as grievously as she had done, his shoulders shaking as the tears flowed down his face in a torrent of grief. Looking back at the porch with the woman, I could see that she was left without a tear. She sat with her shoulders high and a look of wonder on her face. "This is amazing," I thought to myself as I followed the sobbing ragman. Like a curious child who cannot turn away from a mystery, I watched the ragman from a distance. "Rags, rags, new rags for old," rang forth his voice. Though it was still strong, it also shook with the emotion as he wept. "Rags, I take your old rags, rags." In a little while, the sky showed gray behind the rooftops. It was light enough to make out the shredded curtains and damaged blinds that hung in dark windows. The ragman came upon a girl sitting curbside, whose head was wrapped in a bandage, eyes as vacant as the windows around her. Blood soaked her bandage, and a single line of blood ran down her cheek. The ragman paused and turned his weeping eyes upon this empty, injured child. Reaching into his cart, he withdrew a beautiful yellow hat and walked towards the girl. "Give me your rag," he said softly, "and I'll give you mine." The child did not move and could only gaze at him vacantly while he loosened the bandage from her forehead and tied it on his own. I gasped at what I saw. With the bandage went the wound. The girl's head was left unblemished while the ragman's head began to bleed. He set the hat on the girl's head, and suddenly her eyes took on a look of understanding and intelligence that had been missing before. She placed her hand to the side of her head where the bandage had covered the wound that was no longer there. Smiling in wonder, she watched as the ragman rose unsteadily to his feet and moved back to his cart. "Rags, rags, I take old rags," cried out the sobbing, bleeding ragman. "New rags for old rags." With his powerful arms pulling the cart, he continued on his way. He seemed to be moving faster, now with an urgency I hadn't noticed before. He stopped in again in front of a man who was leaning against a telephone pole. "Are you going to work?" he asked. The man shook his head, but the ragman pressed. "Do you have a job?" The man looked him up and down, making note of the ragman's weeping eyes and bleeding head before replying. "Are you crazy?" he sneered. As he leaned away from the pole, he revealed the right sleeve of his jacket, and it was flat, the cuff stuffed into the pocket, because he had no arm. "Give me your jacket," said the ragman firmly, "and I'll give you mine." Such quiet authority in his voice. The one-armed man looked into the other's eyes and then slowly took off his jacket. So did the ragman. I rubbed my eyes in disbelief, and I trembled at what I saw. The ragman's arm stayed in his sleeve, and as the other put on the ragman's jacket, he had two good arms, strong as tree limbs. The ragman was left with one. "Go to work," he said, and then he moved back to his cart. Struggling to make do with his one arm, the ragman began to pull his cart again, this time much faster and with greater urgency. He came upon an unconscious old drunk lying beneath an army blanket, hunched and sick. He took the blanket and wrapped it around himself, but for the drunk, he left new clothes. And now I had to run to keep up with the ragman. He was weeping uncontrollably and bleeding freely from the forehead. He struggled to pull his cart with one arm while stumbling from drunkenness, falling again and again, exhausted, old, and sick. Yet he moved with terrible speed, nearly sprinting through the alleys of the city, covering block after block and mile after mile. I wept to see the changes in this man. I hurt to see his sorrow and ached each time I saw him stumble and fall. When he began to move through the industrial area of the city, away from the houses and apartments, I wanted to stop following and turn away from my grief, to leave it behind and go back to my life. But I could not. I needed to see this sad, amazing story to its end. Who was this ragman? Why had he done what nobody else would have done? Where is he going in such a hurry, and how is this going to end? The once strong ragman was now old and frail, weeping and bleeding, staggering and falling, his body racked with pain, sorrow, and disease. I watched as he came to an old abandoned lot that was filled with piles of trash, old furniture, rusted out shells of cars, and construction equipment. He moved among the garbage pits and piles of human refuse and finally climbed to the top of a small hill made from the trash of 1,000 lives. He struggled to pull his cart and its sad, pathetic burden. With tormented labor, he cleared a little space on that hill. With a deep sigh, he slowly made a bed from the contents of his cart and lay down on it. He pillowed his head on a handkerchief and a jacket. He covered his old aching bones with the army blanket. His body shook under the load of its injuries and pain and disease. His eyes wept and the wound under his bandage continued to bleed. With one last deep sigh, he closed his eyes and died. Oh, how I cried to witness that death. I sat down in an old abandoned car and I wailed and mourned as one who has no hope. I wept because I had come to love the ragman. As I had followed him, I watched him work wonders and change lives so profoundly that it didn't seem fair that he was gone. He had taken those things that were soiled and damaged beyond repair and replaced them with the new and the whole. He had offered hope to the damaged and lost of the city. But if the ragman was gone, then my hope was gone as well. I felt such an overwhelming sense of grief and loss that I remained in the private seclusion of the rusted out car and sobbed myself to sleep. I did not know, how could I know, that I slept through Friday night and Saturday and on through Saturday night as well. But then, on Sunday morning, I was awakened by a violence that shook to the core of my being. Light, pure, hard, insistent light slammed against my tear-stained face and demanded that I awake. When I was finally able to open my eyes, I blinked against the light and squinted in the direction of the pile of trash where the ragman's body had been. As I looked, I saw the last and the first wonder of all. The ragman was there, but he was no longer dead. He was alive. There he stood, folding the army blanket carefully and laying it atop the neatly arranged handkerchief and jacket. Beside the scar on his forehead, there was no other evidence of what he'd previously taken upon himself. There was no sign of sorrow or age, no evidence of illness or deformity. His body was whole and strong, and all the rags that he had gathered shined for cleanliness. I wept to see him again. When I thought that hope had died along with the ragman, I had abandoned any hope for my own life. And yet there he stood, healthy and whole. Climbing from my shelter, I moved toward the ragman, trembling from what I had seen and because of what I knew I needed to do. Walking to him with my head lowered, I spoke my name to him with shame. Looking up into his clear, loving, compassionate eyes, I spoke with the yearning in my voice. Rags, please take my tired rags and replace them with new ones. And he did just that. Taking the old, tired rags of my existence that covered the griefs and wounds of a life sadly lived, he replaced them with the new clothes of a life spent following him. He put new rags on me, and I am now a reflection of the hope he offers to us all, the ragman, the Christ. I totally get that Christianity is confusing because it sounds too good to be true. We don't sacrifice very often, and there are very few people that we are willing to lay our lives down for. But God sent his Son to be in this world and to die for our sins, to experience life the way we experience it, and to be blameless. And all we have to do is acknowledge our sinful nature, ask God for forgiveness, and ask God to come into our heart and make us new. We can choose to follow God and live for him. It's honestly so simple. It's so beautiful, but the world takes it and distorts it. This week, I started the book in my book club, David Goggins' book called Never Finished. In this book, he talks about an experiment done by Kurt Richter, done on rats, where they gather dozens of rats and they drop them into 30-inch deep glass cylinders filled with water. The first rat paddles around the surface for a short time, then swims to the bottom looking for an escape path. Some lasted as long as 15 minutes, but they all gave up. Richter was surprised, so he tweaked the test. And in the next test, when it looked like the rats were going to give up, he scooped up the rats, toweled them off, and held them long enough for their respiratory rates to normalize, long enough for them to register that they'd been saved. They did this a few times and then placed them back in the cylinders. And this time, they didn't give up. They swam, as he says, their natural asses off for an average of 60 hours without food or rest, and one swam for 81 hours. In his report, Richter suggested that the first round of rats gave up because they were hopeless. And the second batch persisted for so long because they knew it was possible that someone would come along and save them. The popular analysis these days is that Richter's interventions flipped a switch in the rat brain that illuminated the power of hope. This is an incredible story, in my opinion. It feels like the science of hope. That is how this story feels. Goggins says that he loves this experiment, but then he goes on to say something so shocking to me. Picture me in my kitchen cleaning, listening to this on Audible, and turning with my mouth open, so shocked at the next words that came out of his mouth. He said, "Hope isn't what got into those rats. How long does hope really last? It may have triggered something initially, but nothing is going to swim for 60 hours without food, powered by hope alone." He continues to say, "Hope is not an anchor point. It's too soft, fluffy, and fleeting. There is no substance behind hope. It's not a muscle you can develop, and it's not rooted down. It's an emotion that comes and goes." And I just thought, wow, this is precisely what the world will tell you. You don't need hope, but I promise you, you can't live without it. And when you don't have hope, you have despair. And when you take a few minutes and you look around our world, or you turn on the news, there's a lot of despair out there, and there is not a lot of hope. So when I realized this week that I know these stories that some of the people that I love the most have never heard, it made me want to record this episode. Because have you experienced situations without hope? Have you felt despair? Have you felt like you're at the end of your rope, and at the end of the rope is still just you? You don't have to live like that. Hebrews 11:1 says, "Faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see." You were knit together in your mama's womb because God had a plan for your very existence. He loved you and created you, and he still loves you just as you are. I hope this message speaks to your heart, and I would love for you to send me a DM on Instagram if you want to talk further about this, but this world needs Jesus. That is all it comes down to for me. It is so simple and beautiful and obvious. But if you keep listening to what the world tells you, you are being sold a false bill of goods. As Christ bursts forth from the tomb, may new life burst forth from us and show itself in acts of love and healing to a hurting world. And may that same Christ who lives forever and is the source of our new life keep your hearts rejoicing and grant you peace this day and always. Amen.